Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Lord Onyx, and all the hosts 7 nights a week for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Soapbox Witch with Onyx. You had a choice and you chose to spend your time here. Thank you for joining me on this magical journey of thought seed farming and music. And good evening, everybody. It is April 22nd, 2015. It is a Wednesday night on Spiritual Unity Radio Network. That means you were listening to the Soapbox Witch, and that means I must be Onyx. So thank you all for joining me. I intend to talk about some things tonight that you may or may not agree with, but that's okay. I want you to think about what I've got to say, and that's what it's all about, thinking. Before we go on further in this, I'd like to also mention a project that is going on, and that was talked about last night on Terry's show, and that's the Morning Glory Zell Memorial Foundation. They're looking to buy a property called in Santa Rosa, California, in the county of Sonoma. And if all goes well, this will be like a pagan retreat village, self-sustaining, all kind of things. I can't give it justice, but I will give you the URL, the link, in the chat room. And I will also give it to you over the air, and that would be http://mgzmfoundation.org. That would be Morning Glory Zell Memorial Foundation.org, mgzmfoundation.org. So go over, check that out. They're trying to raise quite a bit of money. Don't be surprised by the amount that they're trying to raise. But that's, you know, to get the property and to get it going and sustainability, the whole nine yards. Every little bit helps. So if you can't throw a dollar or two at them to do this, then at least share their GoFundMe account and share this link. Get it out. Let people know that this is going on. So there again, the link is in the chat room, and I will say it again over the air for those of you who are listening but not in the chat room, and that's http://mgzmfoundation.org. That's Morning Glory Zell Memorial Foundation.org, mgzmfoundation.org. Thank you, everyone, for every little bit you can do. If you can throw money at this project and share the link, that's just beautiful. If you don't have the money to throw at this project and you're hearing my voice, that means you've got internet or some sort. So share the link. Get the word out. Thank you so much. So that you can so that we can get this going. Next Wednesday night will be April 29th. On April 29th, I will have John Springer as a guest here. For those of you who know John Springer, please join us. For those of you who do not know John Springer, please join us. This is ramp up for the Fairy and Earth Festival that's happening here in North Carolina about the middle of May. He's going to talk about that. He's going to talk about several other projects that he's got going on. So please join us. That's John Springer on Wednesday, April 29th, 2015, 10 o'clock Eastern Time, right here on Spiritual Unity Radio Network. So moving into the topic, tonight I like to talk about what we consider sacred. What is sacred space? Are there different types of sacredness? We're going to talk about the sacred circle in Wicca. We'll talk a little bit about groves. We'll talk about temples. And we may even follow a few tangents as we go along. As I see it, there are many concepts of sacred space in Wicca. These range from the smallest of sacred spaces, which may be called the temple of the body, up to the much larger ideas, like the planetary biosphere, or even the universe. And between these two concepts, between the smallest and the largest, lay the majority of our sacred spaces. What exactly do we mean by the term sacred? Well, the word sacred has both broad and narrow meanings. But these concepts of sacred seem to be generally based on the inherent usefulness of what we consider to be sacred. Things like the planet, water, air, and fire are seen as sacred because we cannot live without them. However, consider this. Water is sacred because we need it to live. But our cars or jobs as creations of man are evil and are therefore not sacred, whether we need them to live or not. Now, I believe that a rational concept of all that is as sacred, you know, everything is sacred, must involve not just the simple creations of the divine that we generally see as sacred because of their usefulness, but even things like cars and jobs that allow us to live in a way that's focused toward our free wills. We must consider either that all things have the capacity to be sacred, or that nothing has. Nothing has that ability or capacity. And I also feel that we are wrong if we say that just because we feel a person's sacred thing does not do what sacred things are supposed to do, that it's not sacred. Now, obviously, sometimes, or quite often, we can see that sacredness can be very contrary. Consider this. There are many people who cannot see any knife or sword as sacred. It's a weapon, right? But at the same time, there are dozens of cultures that consider weapons sacred. In a broad sense, sacredness includes all those things we need to live our lives, regardless of how those things came to be. Now, obviously, I'm not saying that we should understand our jobs to be sacred in the same way that the Holy Grail or the Pope might be to some people. But our houses, food, air, earth, and heat are all equally sacred, because in addition to meeting our physical needs, they also meet our emotional and social needs as well. Okay, so now that I've trounced the discussion of sacredness into a very broad sense, let's talk about sacred space. Sacred space, or space, might be considered sacred for no other reason than that it fulfills a need. But what I want to do is I want to talk about sacred space as defined as sacred in, you know, the more traditional concept, you know, such as consecration and being set aside. We can understand the narrower definitions of sacred as related to, but not the same as, the concept of things being sacred simply by virtue of fulfilling a need. This dichotomy might be a little difficult for some people to understand. Perhaps I'm not saying it right. But consider this. Consider the difference between the concept of water and the specific sacred body of water. Okay? Like a lake. A lake that holds baptism, where baptisms occur, is somehow different from a puddle of water or water in a glass. A lake that is held sacred by your people, or even an ocean that is told in your myths as the birth waters of the human race, is not sacred because it is water, although water is sacred. It is sacred because it is part of a greater body of mythology and a greater part of your culture. So there, I hope that helps you understand what I'm trying to say here, that there's a distinction between the idea of sacred waters and water being sacred because we need it. So let's shift gears here a little bit. Let's talk about the idea of the Wiccan temple, or the sacred circle. We cast the circle in many different ways, but in all cases, it is invested with the same main purpose, which is to place ourselves within a sacred space. The idea of what exactly the sacred space is varies from person to person. Now, for some people, it's a literal marking on the ground within which lies a sanctified area. For others, the act, the casting of the circle itself, is a form of prayer. It's a set of movements that engage the body and the mind in a type of moving or dynamic meditation. It's a set of cues or keys and motions that tell the higher self that now is the time to be involved. This last definition that I talked about is important because it is at the true heart of the circle. It is a transformation as much within the self as outside of it. In ceremonial magic, the circle is used for containment. And usually the work or the crafting or whatever you want to call it is done from outside of the circle. Sometimes the crafting or the work is done from outside of a central circle within a larger circle. In Wicca, the caster is within the circle and contained by it. Now think about this for a moment metaphorically as well. The transformation for a Wiccan is within the Wiccan. And the transformation for the Magus is outside the Magus. The difference is key to an understanding of the difference between the two. Shifting gears once again. I tell you what, let's take a break here because this is a good place to take a short little recess, as it were. And we're going to play a song that we have not played on this station before because it's a new group that just recently got added to our list of artists. And this is going to be a surprise to me as well because I didn't contact this group, and this group, the music for this group was not added by me. It was actually added by Terry. It's called Music for the Goddess. And the song that I'm going to play, he's got labeled here as In the Belly of Goddess. So let's have a listen, you and I. I'll be back on the other side. Thank you.
Call out your name, drive away the dark.
are listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. And now, back to the show.
And welcome back. This is Onyx, and I'm talking to you from up on the soapbox. This is the Soapbox Witch. I want to thank everyone. I want to thank everyone for tuning in tonight. We've got a good crowd in here in the chat room. If you are not in the chat room, you are missing out because a lot of the show happens right there. If you were listening off-site, either through a Facebook link or through TuneIn Radio app or website, then please get a Blog Talk Radio account. You can't beat the price. It's free. Get in here to the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/SURN every night of the week at 10 p.m. Eastern. And joining the fun here in the chat room. We as hosts react to the chat room as best we can. And I will tell you that some of the hosts are much better at that than I. I'm one of those people that tend to have a one track. I know this, I'm just opening a door here for somebody in the chat room, but I'm going to say it anyway. I've got a one track mind. When I'm talking, If I watch the chat room, I get off on a tangent, and I can't stay on track. But I do check back and forth to the chat room during breaks and such on my shows, and most of the other hosts can multitask a lot better than I can, so they're interacting with the chat room at the same time that they're talking. I don't have a clue how they can do it. I can't walk and chew chewing gum at the same time. But the music that you heard was from Music of the Goddess, a new group to join our family of music donators. Yes, donators. Everybody that you hear on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network has released their music to us to play for you. Without us having to pay for royalties or anything. Oh, and what we ask is that you get out there and you support these artists, because this, by supporting them, that's how you can show them that you really appreciate what they're doing and that their music touches your soul, and it allows them to keep making this wonderful, wonderful music for us. So that's one of my big soapboxes as it is. So let's bring it back to our topic. Now, you know, we talked about what sacred is. We've talked about you know, sacred space and things. Let's drive on down this path. So, in general, I consider there to be three types of circle space. We've got the physical, the mental, and the magical or energetic types of circle space. The physical circle represents the actual position of the circle. It can be marked out with salt, chalk, holy water, a line in the dirt, paint, doesn't matter. The idea behind marking the boundary in this way is that the markings serve as notice both to the outside world and to your higher mind or inner self, that this space represents something more than the space outside of it. Now, despite the fact that Wicca is actually a modern religion, traditionally it's said that this is the ancient aspect of the circle, the whole delineation thing. Now, in this regard, that's where our mythic is partially correct. The use of the circle as a protective space very deep within us. Many animals will circle before going to sleep, drawing boundaries around our cities and even our houses is something that's present in some form in all cultures. So we have a fascination or a drive or a need, whatever you want to call it. This whole fascination, need, drive, whatever, probably speaks to a very deep inner desire, as well as having the basic function of separating here . I believe that more importantly than boundaries is the use of a circle as a visual cue or key that links accompanying memories to put the mind in the proper state for worship. As we develop our concept of the elements through meditation, through training, visualizations, however we develop our understanding and our concept of those elements, the building elements I'm talking about are there, fire and water. We develop these accompanying memories. You know, we develop the idea that, for instance, and this is not holy writ, this is not absolute the way it has to be, but for instance, we develop the concept deep within our minds that in the East, we have air, and that represents new beginnings, springtime, the maiden goddess, all these things that it represents. All those things are tied in together and are memories that are drilled deep into us. And the more repetition we have of that, the more reinforcing we have of that, the deeper those memories go. So all of that, though, when the time comes for the use of one of the elements, we have a genuine physical and mental knowledge of that element. And it triggers it. And everything plays in. So, if that's the case, the elemental part of the Wiccan circle then becomes a cycling through the mental states that we associate with each element. This mental space keeping is important because it helps us to separate. Pay attention closely here. It helps us to separate the spiritual activity in our being. This separation helps us recognize the spiritual, separate from the non-spiritual. Follow me on this. This separation, when we go through this elemental cycling, it helps us to separate the spiritual activity in our being, isolate it so that we understand that's what it is. And this separation then helps us to recognize the spiritual as it is separately. And inevitably, it leads back to the willing union of spiritual and non-spiritual. So we learn to separate the spiritual from the non-spiritual. Spirit and matter, remember, spiritual, non-spiritual. Goddess and God, follow me on this, so that we can recombine them with what we deem a more appropriate focus. I've been dropping hints this whole time. This, my friend, is one of the underlying mysteries that is represented in the Great Rite. Important to this mental idea is the concept of the circle as a space both in this world and outside of it, as we shift gears again. So to those who see Wiccan practice in terms of pure energy, this is a literal transformation. To those who believe that the circle is a space existing on the astral plane in the fairy realm or in any other dimension, there is obviously a need for protection, since all these places are supposedly filled with all sort of nasties. This fear-based drive for the perfect circle, make sure I'm protected in the circle, or nothing can get in and hurt me. This drive for the perfect circle for more stress and anxiety in the new Wiccan than the fear of persecution. It's from these people who consider the circle protective in nature, the sacred circle, this, you know, the temple, the white Wiccan circle, to be protective in nature, that we see the additions of elements of ceremonial magic into the Wiccan circle. What elements are you talking about, Onyx? Well, I'm talking about, and I'm referring to, John Dee's. Everybody knows who that is. John Dee, Dr. John Dee, remember Enochian magic way back in time, Victorian era. John Dee's inherently Christian watchtowers and angels, along with powdered sulfur, silver or iron, mercury or blood, which is alchemical, and the names of the Abrahamic deity, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. So that's something to think about. Is the circle that we cast, is it protective? Okay. Let's just think about that. So let's consider the next type that we're talking about, the energetic or magic nature of the circle. This magical nature is to see the circle as an extension of the power of the will or the power of intention. When we consider this idea, we can understand the ideas behind the energetic notions of the circle. When the circle is not being used as a dynamic meditation, like we talked about earlier, moving meditation, them cycling through the connections with the elements, it then serves as a receptacle for the energy that is expressed as a form of the will. It's because of this that some people envision it as a cone, a sphere, or a cylinder that can be burst to direct power into the universe in the direction of desire. Now, this can be seen by some in the form of a prayer, or in the form of excited molecules, or even the form of a gas-like aether or something that takes the magical energy and directs it to the designated place. Now, this designated place, this target, it could be a goal, or to generic goodness, or, you know, the healing of the earth, or to the gods themselves. When the circle is being used like this, it's as much a container as a bowl. Therefore, the boundaries, if not seen as completely impermeable, are at least seen as selectively impermeable. But regardless of the purpose or the conceptualization, whether you see the outer edge of the circle as the gateway to another world or as a mental boundary between one type of experience and another, doesn't matter. The innate holiness of the space cannot be denied. It is sanctified in the classical sense by being set aside from normal usage. And it is this idea, this concept of sanctification that leads to other notions of sacred space. Now I'm going to let you think about that for a little bit. A little bit of soundbite, a little bit of food for thought. Taking a short break. And this time, I'm going to go back to an old standby that I like to always play on my shows. But I'm going to try to pick a song by Darrin the Bard that we don't normally play. So this is a song called Howl and Toe. I hope you enjoy.
Take no scorn to wear the horn. Was the crest when you were born? Your father's father wore it, and your father wore it too.
Howl and Toe, jolly rumble-o.
One power in the universe, and I am a perfect manifestation of that power. And as such, I pray for peace. I pray for love. I pray for stability. I pray for the nation where I live. I pray for the world. By my will, so mote it be, and it is so.
You are listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, where we believe that all manifestations of the divine are valid. You had a choice, and you chose to spend time with us. Join us nightly at 10 p.m. Eastern Time for a wide variety of programming. If you miss one of our shows, there are plenty of places to catch up. Every show is archived at www.blogtalkradio.com/CERN. Look for the on-demand shows. They are available as a free podcast download on iTunes and now available free on the TuneIn Radio application and website. Follow us on Twitter at SURN_ORG and on Facebook. Each of our shows has a Facebook presence so that you can keep abreast with what is going on. If you have any moans, groans, gripes, bitches, complaints, or compliments, you may send those to the station management by emailing surn.org@gmail.com. On Thursday nights, Onyx and Terry discuss questions that have been sent in by you, the listeners. If you have a question you want them to discuss, please send it to the station's email address. If you'd like credit for the question, please let us know in the email. For more information about our network, please click over to www.spiritualunityradionetwork.org. Your support is greatly appreciated, and we humbly thank you for that.
You're listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. And now, back to the show.
And welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back, Cotter. Those of you who remember that, now you know how old I am. Okay, so this is the Soapbox Witch, and I am Onyx, and we are talking about sacredness. So let's go on down this rabbit hole. Now, some call another type of sacred space a temple. Now, this is a sacred space, indoors or out, that's set up to revere a deity or deities, or as a place for worship. I see temples in two different types. The first type is the ones that house statues or relics. The second type is those used as worship spaces. Now, a lot of people refer to the first type as a shrine because of the small forest altars and the household shrines that we're most familiar with. Those are the easiest to imagine, the examples that are easiest to imagine. However, many of the greatest temple remains from the ancient past fall into this category. These places housed relics or images of the gods or a particular god where people could visit to stand in awe or to offer a sacrifice. But they were not places where people would enter for communal worship. The most obvious or the most visible of this type of temple or shrine is probably the Parthenon, because the Parthenon housed a huge statue of Athena. Now, although this space was later used for a church and a mosque, the original intention was not a building people would enter to do those things that we, as many of us, as Westerners, would equate with worship. These things, which, you know, that equate with worship here in the Western world, might include things like going into the building in large numbers, listening to a person give a sermon or a speech, and singing, praying, and doing other types of worship within the building. All that stuff Pesach is reserved for the second kind of temple, the communal one. These shrines, even though they don't serve as places for group worship, have a very, very valuable place in reality, in our reality. When they're visible, they send our brain a reminder of the visibility of the divine in our lives, or the gods in our lives. I heard a metaphor one time that I really like. Temples to the gods in visible places serve to remind us of the gods in the same way that trees remind us of the wind. When we cannot feel or hear the wind, the movement of the trees reveals its presence. And in those times when we cannot feel or hear the gods, the presence of the shrine reveals their presence, or at the very least, reminds us of times when we felt their presence enough to build the shrines to them in the first place. So I believe that a spiritual life is a combination of two things. A combination of spiritual practice and living in such a way that the spiritual is always just under the surface of your consciousness. We can be trained to interpret visual cues to the divine as clearly and as easily as we can learn to pick up body language. I also believe that training our minds to snap to awareness of the divine when needed can open up a completely new range of thought. You know, we, in our faith group, we are, a lot of times we often, you know, we say that if something elicits a powerful negative response, it's wrong for you to follow or honor that something, whatever that something is. But if we say that, we also have to understand that if something elicits a powerful positive response, we're obligated to pursue it. Now follow this closely, okay? We bring religion out of the stratosphere of the superego and the higher mind and come down to the animal mind. I think you'll find, if you'll follow me on this tangent, I think you'll see where I'm going. We could be like rats in a Skinner box. I don't know if anybody knows what a Skinner box is, but you'll understand. Pressing the levers that give us food or pleasure, and avoiding the levers that bring us pain and sickness. So we're always seeking after the things that feel good, and we're avoiding the things that are bad. We instinctively do that. But at the same time that we're like these rats, we also understand the higher mind's ability to mediate our responses. And we're thinking like real human beings. We know that we can deal with extraordinary pain when it's for a higher purpose. We know that the higher mind can alleviate the most visceral responses. So if you look at that, we're talking about the negative responses, you know, we're talking about eliciting the negative responses. Once we realize that a truly, we understand that a truly visceral response is a reaction of both the higher mind and the animal mind. Now, this isn't a lecture on neuroscience, so I'm going to back off on that. But it might seem, you know, it's kind of a tangent right now. But consider this, okay? Consider this. This is why I went there. Consider that only people who had experienced these gut sensations right inside your gut, of the presence of the divine. Only people who have experienced this deep feeling, sensation of the presence of the divine, by the way, that's called numinosity. Those are the people that crave them just as much as our bodies crave oxygen and food. So it's only natural that these people do those things that elicit these responses as much and as often as possible. Now you see where the tie-in back to the Skinner box is. Now, understanding this, it becomes obvious that the search for communion with the divine, even that minute, very minute communion of being reminded of the divine presence embodied in the viewing of shrines and temples, just the reminder, can remind us of that numinous feeling. Even if we're not feeling it right now, go back a little bit in the show, and I talked about the memory training and the keys and the triggers, those things. That's what the shrines are all about. Okay, moving right along. Let's move on to the second type of temple structure. Remember, I said there were two. Okay. These can range from what we would generally think of as temples, such as the huge edifices of marble and stone, all the way to just a simple ring made of trees and a field. These structures are temples that serve the same purpose as the churches some of us may be more familiar with, those of us who were pagan immigrants. They're a place for communal worship. Their permanence serves a different purpose than the ritual of the circle casting. The permanent temple serves as a community meeting area that allows the community to better describe itself. Okay, I've got to... I want to step up on another one of my soapboxes for a few minutes, so bear with me here. In the early days of Wicca, the temple or the large shrine was something that existed only in the domain of the rich eccentric, or existed on private property. It might have been well liked by the community, but it was still in the possession of the landowners. With the larger groups of today's community, especially in urban areas, urban groups, the idea of building permanent community worship space is something that becomes possible with a very minimum of investment in a community. Older buildings on the outskirts of the dying commercial districts, the owners of those buildings are looking to either unload them or to rent them out for really, really cheap. So, moderate-sized communities who actively contribute a small amount to the building fund are fully capable of keeping it running if they have some form of leadership and active organization. But, unfortunately, you know, we see the petty infighting and the nonsense actions of some of the leaders in the pagan community. And that has brought a huge number of people to the point, and the number of people in our community, to the point that they will probably never trust any leader, no matter how skilled they are. And on the flip side of that, the behavior of some independent pagans towards people that they perceive as leaders is also so insane that a huge percentage of leaders who would be excellent leaders just do not have the Teflon coating that's needed to put up with it. Follow me for a moment in this voyage of the imagination, okay? Imagine we have a group of about 100 people in an urban area, very close to a depressed commercial zone, willing to participate in a communal temple. Now, here's a way to go about it. This could be an area dedicated to a god, a pantheon, or worship itself, overseen by people that are invested in its upkeep, still a public service. Statues, meeting rooms, places of worship are placed as needed by the community, and perhaps maybe the venture is partially funded by a small shop, or it could be funded by renting rooms out when they're not in use for support groups and classes and meetings. Now, following that tangent, the group rents out these rooms for different support groups during the week, or, you know, on the days that they're not using, they're not occupying, for classes. Reiki masters might want to rent out some space for Reiki class, whatever, meetings, any of that, rent it out. But if the group rents out these spaces, they can put vending machines with snacks and drinks in a common area to further fund the building. Proceeds go to the building. Because when people are in meetings and such like that, they might want a drink or they might want a snack or whatever. Convenience, right there. They don't have to go to the convenience store down the street. There's vending machines right there. And the temple uses the proceeds to help fund the community center. Now, of course, if this community is large enough to fund the living quarters and a small stipend for a full-time clergy person who's essentially being paid to be available at all times, more power to them. And even if the community is not large enough to afford the space by itself, maybe they could find a similarly minded community to share the space, go in together with. These temples could serve the purpose of the old marketplaces or the mead halls and things like this of our ancestors. They could be places where the community meets in the real world to interact and to worship and to learn. These community centers and temples or whatever you want to call them might be the direction that we're going in the next couple of decades. Too many otherwise great examples of them are ruined by being affiliated with shops with questionable ethics, or with exclusionary groups, or with power-hungry leaders, and with burned-out community members. They fall into ruins because of these things. But those few that survive will pave the way for an ease of access to communal worship that would shock and amaze founders of this movement. I think this is where we can go. I don't see where we can go wrong. So there's my thoughts for tonight. Think about it. Put what I've said into the meat grinder, in the food processor of the brain. Think about it. Because that's what it's all about. And also about doing. Because remember the old adage, after all is said and done, there's a whole lot more said than done. Germinate the seeds. Plant those seeds. Choose a direction. And let's go. We are evolving. And I challenge you, each and every one of you, to be involved as we evolve. Thank you for tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow night with Under a Shady Tree, Terry Power, and then again on Saturday night with LCO on BTR. I appreciate every single one of you and all your support. If you don't like what we're doing, let us know. If you like what we're doing, let other people know. You can contact the station at surn.org@gmail.com. You can send mail directly to me at revonyxhp@ladyofthecircle.org. You can find out more about the organization that I'm involved with, Lady of the Circle and the Oaks, and all those other things that I've got my sticky little fingers in, by going to ladyofthecircle.org. There is a new page on Facebook that is not linked to the website quite yet, but is easily searchable. Raven's Nest Media. And it happens to be facebook.com/ravensmedia. So go check out the page. I'll be using that page to keep everybody who wishes to be updated on where I will be and where I'm appearing, everything media about me. So as it stands now, I have a CNN iReport, a WordPress blog, a YouTube channel, the commitment here on CERN. I've also got, I manage International Pagan Radio. Check that out. It's internationalpaganradio.com. There are other projects out there. So, yeah. I don't care if you think like me. I just want you to think. And I will continue to plant thought seeds. And I will continue to challenge you to think. Good night, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's always a pleasure. Love always. Good night and blessed be.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.